cut across the stars. Then I saw that something else, equally black but far vaster, was obstructing a whole swath of stars towards the west. It was a storm, as Kaweah had predicted, creeping in from the ocean, ready to engulf the peninsula in monsoon. As if acknowledging my diagnosis, the night's previously calm and warm air began to stir, a breeze toying with the tops of the trees. I returned to the tent, found a torch, and began to follow the path Kaweah had taken, guided by the intermittent pulses of his gun, like a lighthouse beacon. The undergrowth became treacherous, and it took me several minutes to find my way to the patch of ground, a small clearing, where he stood shooting. I doused my torch across his body, announcing my arrival. Still squeezing off pulses, he said, "I told you not to disturb me, Tenor." "I know, but there's a storm coming in. I was worried you wouldn't notice until it began to rain, and then you might have trouble finding your way back to the camp." "I'm the one who told you there was a storm coming," he said, not turning to face me, still engrossed in his target practice. I could barely see what he was shooting at. His laser pulses knifed into a void of darkness devoid of detail. But I noticed that the pulses followed each other very precisely, even after he adjusted his stance or unshouldered the rifle to slip in another ammo cell. "It's late anyway. We should get some sleep. If Rivich is delayed, it could be a long day tomorrow, and we'll need to be sharp for it." "You're right, of course," he said, after due consideration. "I just want to make sure I can maim the bastard if I choose." "Maim him? I thought we were setting him up for a clean kill." "What would be the point of that?" I stepped toward him. "Killing him's one thing. You can bet he wants to kill you, so there's a kind of sense to it. But he hasn't done anything to earn that kind of hatred, has he?" He sighted along the gun and squeezed off a pulse. "Who said he has to, Tenor?" Then he snapped the gun's stock and sight into their stowage modes, slipping the gun onto his back, where it looked like a piece of frail rigging lashed to the side of a whale. We walked in silence to the camp, the storm rising overhead like a cliff of obsidian, pregnant with lightning. The first drops of rain were falling through the treetops when we reached the camp. We checked the guns were protected from the elements, triggered our perimeter infringement detectors, and then sealed ourselves into the tents. The rain began to drum against the fabric, like impatient fingers on a tabletop, and thunder roared somewhere to the south. But we were ready, and returned to our bunks to snatch what sleep we could before we had to rise to catch our man. "Sleep well tonight," Kaweah said, his head peering through the gash in my tent, "for tomorrow we fight." It was still dark. The storm was still raging. I woke and listened to the rain's fusillade against the fabric of the bubble tent. Something had troubled me enough to bring me from sleep. It happened sometimes. My mind would work away at a problem, which had seemed clear-cut in daylight, until it found a catch. It was how I had filled in some of the more subtle security loopholes at the reptile house, imagining myself as an intruder and then devising a way to penetrate some screen that I had imagined until then to be absolutely foolproof. That was what it felt like when I woke, that something unobvious had suddenly been revealed to me, and that I had been making a terrible error of assumption. But for a moment I could not quite recall the details of the dream, what had been vouchsafed to me by my own diligent subconscious processes. And then I realized that we were being attacked. "No," I started to say. But it was much too late for that. One of the most pragmatic truths about war, and the way it affected us, was that many of the clichés were not very far